Life has its ups and downs, and like many of us, I face moments with depression. Music has always helped me find my way through, and I believe it can do the same thing for you. I'm James Cox, and this is the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, a podcast about the healing power of music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicapped host, James Cox. And I have another interview today. This guy is great. He was a full-time lawyer. Now he turned musician. And we're going to talk to him in just a minute. But I got introduced by this man, I think, through Michael Stover.
Mike Stover, yeah.
Yes, because he found me through podcast guest or pod guests, you know, that's a big thing for me to do. So welcome Tim Tye is here with us. Tim Tye.
Hey.
Yes sir.
How great are you to doing be today? Here.
Good.
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good to have you. I want to dive deep in your lawyer aspect first because I think that's very needed to hear the story about how you became a lawyer and shifted into a musician.
Well, I've been a lawyer now for 48 years.
Oh yeah.
It's unbelievable. And I'm still practicing law.
Okay.
I'm not practicing as hard as I used to, but I'm still doing it. And you know, the story, I guess, is that, you know, I started playing guitar when I was a teenager. You know, that's kind of the standard story.
Yeah.
And I started out by writing song parodies because I was more comfortable with words than I was with the music.
Right.
And eventually I started writing the music. And it wasn't until much later, like 2009, when I got the idea to record some original songs. And four albums later, here I am.
Right, which is all great stuff. So Dark Stretch of the Road was your very first album, came out in 2014.
Right.
And then you had A Few Good Years, 2019. But last year, 2025, you came out with a compilation of both of them. Am I correct about that?
It's got some from the first two albums got virtually no promotion. They were just sort of, and so we picked some stuff off of those and we had a bunch of new stuff.
Right.
And we put it all together and that's Just Before Dawn.
Right. Yes, Just Before Dawn, which came out August 8th of last year, which is about almost close to a year now, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Yep. So I listened to Dark Stretch of the Road and A Few Good Years together, and my favorite songs off of the whole bunch is Only the Moon is Blue.
Oh, every time I touch you, oh, I hope
Hearts Are Wild, The Hurting Stops Here, and Straight at the Sun. All very, very awesome and amazing songs.
That's good, because those are some of my favorites.
But Midnight Sky is more than just you at the helm. Yeah, I noticed you have a different singer on Only the Moon is Blue and Straight at the Sun. You got a female singer on Straight at the Sun, and it's like a punk rock kind of vibe on Only the Moon is Blue. Am I kind of correct on that?
Yeah, okay. Sort of a punk rock.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of a, you know, it's basically a rock tune.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So the lawyer, okay, so what kind of law did you practice or you're still practicing now?
Yeah, I'm now it's basically an office practice. I do estate planning, business and real estate stuff.
Okay.
You know, I can sit there at my computer and write songs when I don't feel like pushing paper for a while. So it's kind of a nice gig.
Yeah, so none of that court stuff, right? Not anymore.
I did tons of that in the past.
Oh, yeah, I'm true. Yeah.
I'm at a point, you know, if that's all I could do, I would retire.
Right. Because I don't think that's a very lucrative job, but it's not the most... I hear that's the loneliest job to do ever is when you're a lawyer, you know.
Well, it's stressful.
Yeah.
It just takes up a lot of time. I have a policy that I don't work after 5 or on weekends. I don't even look at emails.
I agree.
And if you're doing trial work, it's like you never really have time off. Something's always happening. So, I got kind of a nice situation going here.
So I would understand that music helped you through the dark periods of time when you're a lawyer, because there are dark periods of time all the time, pretty much, when you're a lawyer, you know.
Well, when you're human.
And you're human, yes.
You know,
But I imagine you lean towards music whenever things got really tough, I guess, for you. Is that the correct word to use?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you know who Steve Vai is. He's a guitar player, shredder.
Oh, yeah.
I read an interview with him decades ago, and he says, you know, you can be like the dweebiest kid in high school. You can be lonely. You can be miserable. And he says, if you can play 3 chords on a guitar, you can go into a whole different world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know a few more than 3 chords, but I understand that there's just something about picking up that guitar. Whether you're playing something or just noodling around on it, it really does take your mind off of whatever problems you got.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, music can really heal the soul, the mind, and attitude, you know.
Absolutely.
Because when you're in a very, very mean state of your mind, you listen to your favorite song and, oh, there it goes, you know, and in comes the nice, you know, nice brain that you can use, you know.
Or you take a more blues approach and you go, yeah, that guy's, he's sort of sad. I kind of feel the way he feels.
Yeah.
And that gives you a certain amount of, I guess, reassurance that he's getting through it and so will you.
Right. Yeah. Being a musician, I'm going to ask you this because I figured we could have a good time talking about this. Blues, where do you think it originated from? A lot of people say Clarksville. But a lot of people are saying Memphis, you know. My mom was born in Clarksville, so I'm on the Clarksville side, of course, you know, because I'm biased towards, you know, Clarksville, because I visited there like all the time when I was, you know, growing up. But Memphis or Clarksville?
Yeah, the nature of music is that it's full of stories that aren't exactly true.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you look at... especially where we talk about folk music, the blues, everybody's got some kind of an origin story. I mean, I think Clarksdale's maybe as good as any other. It's got an amazing amount of, you know, sort of history and mythology around it. You know, where exactly were the crossroads,
right.
Where, you know, Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil and all that stuff. You could, but one thing you could say is it didn't even really start in the United States.
Okay.
You know, you could say it started in Africa. And it was added to by a bunch of Europeans that came over here slowly but surely and ended up settling in Appalachia. And so whenever you're looking at the origin of something like that, it's almost impossible to point to a point where before this, no blues, after this, the blues.
Right. Yeah.
But Clarksdale certainly, you know, it has its claims to fame. And, you know, if somebody said to me, Tim, you know, name the place, I'd probably say Clarksdale. But I would know that was really, that was just sort of an easy answer. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily the whole truth.
The right answer. Yeah, no one knows the right answer, but I think Clarksdale gets more attention because of the crossroads, you know.
Although they're not really crossroads. You know,
if you look
at those two roads, yeah, they're not exactly crossroads.
No.
But they got a big sign there that says, here it is.
Right, and that's where everybody goes to, you know, for a picture or something. You know, I've been to the crossroads, you know.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is just, you know, clever marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get the word out. This is where the blues started. You put up some billboards and some signs and, I know. I've never made it down there, but I know lots of people that just.
Oh yeah.
They went there just because of its reputation. They wanted to be able to say they went there.
It's more like a lore story than fact, you know, which is great because everybody loves lores of, you know, stories. You know, can't tell whether it's true or fake. It's kind of like on a fine line, you know.
Well, it's like they say at the beginning of a movie, it was inspired by a true story.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily a true story
because no one knows exactly. Yeah. So, a lot of people dream about what you did, like reinventing your career later in life. What gave you the courage to finally say, okay, now my lawyer career is behind me, so I can just focus on mainly music since I'm like a behind the desk kind of guy now.
I think it was 2008 or 2009. I met a periodontist from Charleston, South Carolina, and he had dropped a CD of original songs. Now he wasn't a very good songwriter, but I thought he could do this. I don't know. Before that, it seemed like it was just too daunting a task, too difficult.
Right.
And I talked to a buddy of mine here in town, Mike Stark, who's been a musician as long as I have. And he introduced me to a really great sound engineer named Gary King. And, you know, I got some musicians together. We went into the studio and recorded our first song, which was called Warm Summer Nights. And I thought, this really sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And so we did another one because my first thought was maybe I'll do a couple really good songwriting demos because I always see myself principally as a songwriter. That's, you know, everything else I do really is meant as a way to showcase the songs because I'm hoping someday that somebody else picks up one and says, I'd like to record this.
Right.
But anyway, I got 11 songs, and it took several years because, you know, you got so much stuff going on, and when you have to book musicians, my schedule, studio schedule, engineer schedule, and everybody's working, it could get a little bit frustrating at times. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of times where I thought, maybe this is as far as it goes. I've got 5 or 6 songs, and then I'd get that bug. Maybe I'd write another song. Because when I started that first project, I had all the songs picked out, but I kept writing and I kept thinking, well, this is better than the one I was going to use.
Yeah.
So a lot of the songs were written while I was recording Dark Stretch. And, you know, eventually I released it. And I thought, okay, well, I've done that. What am I going to do next? Then I'd say, I like this song. I think I'm just going to record this one song to see how it sounds. And anyway, one thing kept leading to another.
I mean, look at you now, right? Yeah. So while you were writing these songs, Is there a particular song in your catalog that you really couldn't, like it was more emotionally challenging for you to write? But you knew how to you knew that you had to write it, you know, to get it out.
Dark Stretch of Road.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of those songs that really captured how I was feeling at that moment.
Right.
Which made it, on the one hand, I guess emotionally difficult, but artistically it was easy. I had most of that done in an hour
Yeah.
because I had all that sort of like emotional energy.
Right.
And yeah, Dark Stretch of Road was, I think it's, I still think it's one of my best efforts.
Right. So when people listen to Midnight Sky for the very first time, what kind of feeling do you want them to walk away with? You know, what's your main
Well,
impression there?
I like to think that they felt something.
Okay.
They've either felt like I hit a chord that they had within themselves, and they said, "Yes, I can identify with that." I'd like them to feel that maybe they felt just a little better after they listened to the music. Of course, I'd like them to say, "I could listen to that like over and over."
Yes.
I mean, that ultimately, I think, is what you want as a recording artist, that, to have something that, because there's lots of stuff you can listen to once and go,
Nah, that's
"Yeah,
okay.
that's fine, but I
Right.
don't really, but you try to throw in enough hooks
Yeah.
that they listen to it once or twice and they get the so-called earworm. And they can't get out. I've had people tell me, I just can't get that song out of my head. And I'm thinking, good.
Right. Yes. That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you always want them to come back and whenever you play live, you always want them to bring up that song because that's the most played song on the
Yeah,
playlist, you know.
exactly.
Awesome. But okay, so because you have lived such a full life outside of music, you know, before you really got back into it, do you feel like your songwriting gives a different perspective to say the artists who just begin writing at 18 or like just starting in the band?
I've got to believe that songs I'm writing now are maybe more complex emotionally, not necessarily musically,
Right.
simply because I've had so many years to live.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like Straight at the Sun, I wrote the chorus for that probably 25 years before I recorded it.
Okay.
And I couldn't get the verse. I just couldn't get the verses right. And then finally, one day, I sat down and I knew what I needed to do,
Yeah.
and I finished it. So it's a combination of, very old and very new.
Right. So it's not just like I live longer, so I know a lot more things. It's just you know, I don't know what I'm trying to ask you. I guess it's like, yeah. Well. I guess like every artist has its right to has their right to actually write their own lyrics. But when you come across any artist that lived longer than like Motley Crue at 1980s, you know,
Yeah.
their songs feel more adjusted to you because you also lived that life longer than, you know, right?
Yeah,
Do you know what I'm saying?
I have a lot of friends that think this way, that, I mean,
Yeah.
I listen, when I'm listening to the radio, it's mostly oldies stuff.
Yeah, yes, oldies is
50s,
good.
60s, and 70s.
Yes.
Now, I've got satellite radio in one of the cars, and there I've got like 50s gold and 60s gold. But I got like Little Steven's Underground Garage, which I love. And there's a channel called Outlaw Country, and Steven Van Zandt's also the programmer for that. So I get to hear some new stuff, which I tend to like, but it's rare that I hear something and go, I've got to download that. I want to listen to it over and over again. It's really hard. And I've never really taken any kind of a poll here, but you know, most of my friends, when they're driving around, they're listening to stuff from their youth.
Yeah.
Because that's the point at which all of these ideas sort of get engraved into your mind, and they feel comfortable. Right. You know, they take you back to a time that, you know, I think most people look back at their youth and look at it as a time that's more, it's less complicated, you know, sort of easier than it is when you're actually having to do grown-up things.
Right.
So you listen to that, you know, this time you think about the times you fell in love, and you think about, you know, all those things bring memories back, whereas new stuff really doesn't.
Yeah. So on this podcast, we talk about music as well as depression. My next question to you today is, when you are in those difficult seasons of life, you know, depression, stress, you know, you have a lot of stress, right? Many people handle that differently. As a songwriter, do you go to writing out your feelings first, or handle it a different way and then come back and write? Because writing relieves a lot of stress that I want to get, you know, across to our listeners, you know.
There's nothing like pulling that guitar off the stand.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Sitting down, and you really never know what's going to happen. I tend to have some of them are covers, some are my songs, but I'll tend to do a couple of songs I know just to kind of get warmed up.
Right.
And then, you know, my process, typically it starts with one line.
Right.
There'll be something that just sounds good. Like Only the Moon is Blue. I thought that was an interesting line. I didn't know what I was going to do with it. The hurting stops here.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote that for a particular woman that I was very much in love with.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the hurting didn't stop there.
All right. Oh,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, I wrote that song. And sometimes I think about re-recording it. You know, I like what we did, but sometimes it sounds almost a little too sweet. I think because when I play that for people, I have a much different voice. It's sort of a gravelly baritone, and you know, people tell me, you know, Tim, you do a better job of selling that song than the guy who, you know, recorded it for you.
Right.
Yeah. Every so often, because I love that song. I think I got a couple of great hooks in there. It's a true story. That woman meant a lot to me. Yeah. So maybe I will one day.
Yeah. Maybe you will, you know.
Or not.
I think that it's, would it be, I guess it would be easier to go back and fix the things that you didn't think about back then, because one, you have the full song. Two, now you know exactly what to do with it. And that's like 80% of the, you know.
There's no right or wrong when it comes to something. That's why, you know, again, I would love to sell a song to another artist just because it would be an ego boost.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But just as important, I'd love to hear what someone else did with the song.
Yes. Yeah, because everybody,
I co-produce. I've always got someone to help me with the production because I really couldn't do it on my own.
Yeah.
But you know, I play a big part in how the thing's going to be arranged and the sound. And is it going to be country? Is it going to be pop? But I would love to just hear somebody who couldn't care less about what I thought, and have them bring their vision to it. That would really be exciting. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but. You know, I'm still hopeful.
Well, I hear that the mind is a wonderful thing. So if you keep saying you will, you know, one day sooner or later, you know, hopefully sooner than later, you know, but the mind is a powerful, powerful thing, you know.
You have to believe in yourself. That doesn't necessarily get you over the line, but you do have to believe, and you have to have a certain level of ego, I think, to believe that you're good enough to achieve the goal that you want.
Exactly.
And I've got enough ego, I guess. I believe I can do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean I don't understand why people say you don't have to root for yourself. You absolutely have to root for yourself, you know, because who's going to do it for you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. You have got to believe that you can make it happen.
Yeah, you got to be your own fan, number one fan of all time. You know, it doesn't matter what, you know, Steve I says or like, you know, whoever, you know, just, yeah. So that's awesome.
Although I think it is important. Sometimes people will tell me, like, what their favorite songs are, and it surprises me.
Right. So, yeah.
And like when I talk to Mike Stover about what we're going to put out next, I pretty much go with him.
Yeah. Oh, I love Mike Stover.
There might be something I like better, but he's doing this all day long. He's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
So I have to believe that he has a better ear for what's going to work than I do.
Yeah, Mike's such a good guy. I love Mike to death. You know, he was one of the best. Here's a funny question for you: if Midnight Sky was a movie soundtrack, what kind of movie would it be?
I think it would be a drama.
Okay, perfect.
And I think it would be, a little bit dark in places. But I think it would have a happy ending.
Yeah. Everybody loves a happy ending, right? Especially me, you know?
Yeah. It's what you always hope for. But that's, no one's ever asked me that question. It's a great question.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. I'm glad I asked it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we let you go in, I appreciate you coming on for sure. This has been a great chat. But what is next for you and Midnight Sky? Are there any new projects coming up? Are we going to, you know, finally see a re-release of some songs like you just mentioned, you know?
Well, I've got some stuff I'm recording, you know, right now.
Yeah.
I'm sort of, you know, it's like awards nomination season right now.
Yeah.
And in 2024, when Last Hope for the Modern World came out, I got really lucky. I was nominated as a band album of the year for the ISA Awards in Atlanta, and then a country male album of the year, the Josie Awards at the Grand Ole Opry.
Right.
So I never thought I'd go to the Grand Ole Opry, you know, as a nominee.
Right.
And I'm kind of hoping I can, something gets nominated off of the new album. You know, you do what you can and push things as hard as you can. I kind of like to see that happen.
Well, all of those songs are absolutely killer songs, and I believe that you will get a nomination, or you could win. You know, I mean, who's the winner? You know, I mean, you know, sky's the limit. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah. Final question I have for you. If someone out there feels like it's a little too late to follow their dream, what would you tell them, in all honesty?
I will tell them that before I got like real serious about this, I was in my 50s.
Okay.
Now, of course, now that seems like pretty young. But I'm still, again, you will not hear me say, well, you know, at my age, what's the point? At my age, too late. Hey, as long as I'm above ground, as my dad would have said, it's not too late.
No, never too late to get into music, you know? Because I'm 46 and I still yet learn how to play guitar. And I got 7 of them. Who does that besides me, right? I'm sure Steve has like millions of them. But
the best thing is it's been a lot of fun.
Yes.
you know, there's frustrations. You get, you know, you get writer's block, or you have a studio session where people really aren't prepared, and you know, get a little bit upset about it. But overall, it's been a lot of fun.
Nice. So before we let you go, I want to give you some shout outs. Everybody can go to midnightskymusic.com and see what Mr. Tim is up to nowadays. And he's on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter.
I'm on all the streaming platforms. Yeah. So I'm on Spotify, Apple, all my stuff's out there.
Cool.
If you have any interest in getting a hold of me, I'm at ttie53@gmail.com. Not only that, you can call me, 937-305-5800. For any reason, you want to just chat, give me a call. I'm happy to hear from you.
Awesome. And I'll leave all the fun links below so they know exactly where to go and how to get with you. So, Tim, this has been a wonderful conversation. I do love you, and I beg you to come back anytime you want to, okay?
Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, sir. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.